Welcome to the full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:05 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 28th. Well, I thought we'd kick off today with 10-year Treasury yields. I think it's the basis upon which everything else is really valued. It goes all the way back to the market adage that everything is priced off the 10-year. And it held the 1% level in here today, so up about 3 basis points. And it helps to emphasize the fact that bond investors, they might be willing to buy the dips, but at the same time, there isn't a great deal of demand when we start to see yields below 1%. So all of that is, I think, being fed by the determination of the Federal Reserve to avoid tapering. They're not going to taper anytime soon. They've said that in about as blunt a statement as you might wish for, yes, particularly yesterday with Jay Powell's statements. So the liquidity is going to remain in the market for as long as it's required. They're going to wait until they have incontrovertible evidence of inflation. In other words, they're going to do whatever it takes to stoke inflation. So when it gets to the question of whether we're going to have an inflationary outcome or not, well, I think we have our answer, because the Federal Reserve and other central banks around the world are literally saying they're going to do whatever it takes until they get the desired result. So that means we're going to be in a liquidity-rich environment. But of course, what it also suggests is that investors will sequentially begin to demand a higher yield in order to fund all of this additional spending. And the potential is that yields will continue to rise. In fact, that would be consistent with an economic recovery. And even though the pace of the reflation has moderated over the course of the last 6 weeks, what we're increasingly seeing is that the number of cases is declining. Now, let's set aside for the moment all of the arguments about the efficacy of the data or the efficacy of the testing regime itself, which has been roundly questioned. And those questions are increasingly being absorbed by the people reporting all of these data. And simply just look at what the results are, because a lot of the policies that have been put in place over the last few months, and really over the balance of 2020 after the pandemic went global, have been based upon the number of cases. So in the USA, the number of cases is now trending lower. It's to be expected, at least, that the number of deaths will trend lower subsequently. And as long as that remains the case, then we're looking at the potential for reopening. And then the reflation trade gets a much bigger bump. Of course, we're not quite there yet. But one thing that we've seen is that the S&P 500 bounced in here today. And that's pretty impressive. The Nasdaq was up in positive territory for most of the day, but it gave up most of the advance by the time we got to the close. But it's still holding the 13,000 level. It's still got a sequence of higher reaction lows. The challenge for the Nasdaq is there's a lot of very bullish sentiment priced in. And I'm posting a report from ARK Invest in here today. It's their Big Ideas for 2021, and it contains a lot of blue sky thinking, and a lot of it is there's a good rationale behind some of the thinking. It's only question is whether it's going to be realizable in 2021 and at these prices. Obviously, growth depends on access to low interest rates and abundant credit. And as bond yields start to back up, well, then the rationale for continuing to invest in new ventures at these valuations becomes less convincing. So the productivity and the implementation of all of this really very encouraging technological innovation is highly dependent on access to credit at accommodative terms. Therefore, as bond yields go up, then it does tend to sap some of the enthusiasm for the high growth sector. But One thing that was, I think, rather interesting is when we look at, for example, ARK's innovation ETF, it bounced from the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range. And so far, this trend has been quite consistent, even though it's incredibly steep. Then, when we think about, for example, the biotechnology sector, then it's also on this recovery trajectory, and it has at least held the 5,000 level, which is the upper side of its underlying range. Google has a similar condition. It also bounced today from the region of the upper side of the underlying range. The chart from that ARK presentation that I thought was the most interesting is, let me see, I've got the wrong one now. Is the one that depicts deep learning, because the foundations for technological change and paradigm shifts, which have contributed to the first, second, and arguably the third industrial revolutions, were all tied to communication. It's our ability to communicate with one another and to pool our collective resources in terms of our thought processes as a species, which have allowed us to move through these lengthy periods of technological innovation and industrial revolution. So, this innovation of deep learning, where software is now at a point where it can write itself. So, what that means is that translation services are going to become very simple. That means that instead of innovation being centered in one country, if we get the potential for full translation from particularly from Mandarin, English, and Hindi, or the various Indian languages, and there is cross-pollination, it means that the pace of innovation across the world will massively improve. But what it also means is that we can outsource thinking for the first time, and the scale at which that can be achieved is l virtually limitless, and only really based upon the quantity of chips that we produce. So that is something that is out there in the future, and it's being commercialized as we speak. So it really means that Google is almost like an ETF in its own right, because it's the leader in artificial intelligence. It's one of the leaders in automating driving, and it is arguably the leader in quantum computing as well. And it has invested really very admirably in blue sky technologies. So it is also in its own right a almost like a venture firm, and the share continues to trend higher, and the pace of the advance has picked up since March of last year. We can't quite say the same thing, for example, about Facebook. It's not an especially innovative company. It had one innovation, and then it has bought in the rest. And most of those acquisitions have been about trying to deter the competition. Amazon has been an incredibly innovative company, and it is a leader in providing cloud services. But is it going to be the provider of the next generation of innovation? Because Amazon is not noted as being one of the leaders in predictive programming or anything to that, or that even comes close to that kind of innovation. And the share has also been going sideways. Well, Apple, for example, is talking about producing their own car, and that might be a way of investing their really quite sizable in pile. But if we just go back and think about Apple's history, it doesn't tend to be an innovator either. Usually, what they've done is taken products that exist in the market already and then apply their way of enhancing the design factor. There has been a lot of talk about the fact that it was in fact Samsung was the company that invented the iPhone and tried to license it to Apple. There was a whole trial about that, and it ended in rather nefarious circumstances. I've heard about how that did from some of the lawyers that represented those companies, and the intricacies of it are really mind-boggling in terms of the complexity. But Apple certainly has gained credit for the innovation. But for a company that came out with an innovation like the iPhone, they haven't done particularly well in new innovations, whereas Samsung has been extremely innovative in terms of the types of products that it has brought to market, which would be, I think, should at least be considered in the background about when people think about the capacity for Apple to follow through on its ambitious agenda. But then when we think about what else is going on in this market, well, we're starting to see that the interest in GameStop is moderating. The price was as high today as nearly $500, closed out less than $200. Part of the reason for that is because and of course that is a massive downside key reversal, is that a number of the stock market our brokers are no longer taking buy orders. So the buying frenzy is starting to abate. Now the question and the pressure that's been brought to bear on short sellers will start to moderate, and margin calls will no longer start going out when prices fall $300 in the day. But of course, this pooling of investors, this is in fact illegal. And what is also, I think, and should be in among right-minded individuals at least, is the practice of initiating short positions and then making public a report castigating the share, which is also market manipulation. But of course, the further away we get from the emotionality of internet forums, the easier it is to identify the fact that we're in a highly manipulated environment overall, with quantitative easing being in place now for nearly 12 years. There's the potential that this, or I guess there's no potential that we're going to see any real change in the environment. And the reality is that one of the reasons why silver did better in here today and it jumped from the $25 level is because it started popping up on internet forums as well. And the one thing that is interesting about silver starting to become a topic of conversation among internet provider or internet traders is that silver is less regulated than the stock market. It's also less liquid than a lot of stocks. There is limited supply of the stuff. It's not like we can see, for example, that shares can just be increased at will by companies. And then there's also a rather famous short position out there on the horizon as well. So it does potentially have the kind of characteristics that internet crowds might go for. The question, of course, is whether those crowds will migrate, and will they maintain their cohesion as they migrate, or will they become subject to additional trading prohibitions? So silver did not hold its advance in here today, but at least it is firming from this $25 level. It has now got a higher reaction low. It has unwound most of its overextension relative to the trend mean as well. Gold prices, by contrast, were in negative territory, if only mildly, in here today. And it continues to pause here around the region of the trend mean. Then, when we think about Bitcoin, well, we're presented with a rather interesting phenomenon. The price bounced today from the 30,000 level, and Bitcoin has been correcting for about 3 weeks now. This correction is certainly larger than any we've seen since March. So it's in the order of about 30%, and each of the pullbacks since March of this year were in the region of about 20%. So we have a larger reaction. The breakout failed, it pulled back into the underlying trading range, so we do have some inconsistencies. It really does need to hold that 30,000 level if the benefit of the doubt is to continue to be given to the upside. And Ethereum, which I regard as high beta, Bitcoin, is similar to silver in that it is outperforming Bitcoin. And it continues to hold its sequence of higher reaction lows, and it rebounded from the $1,200 level in here today. So it's still in a reasonably benign environment overall. But of course, the other point is that the dollar has steadied or had steadied yesterday, and it was a little weaker in here today. And it seems that any time the dollar strengthens, it saps interest in risk assets, and every time it weakens, then we see this rebound coming through. Well, that kind of activity is very similar to what we see with carry trades. I remain very much of the opinion that the dollar is the carry trade currency of choice for the simple reason that the Federal Reserve is the central bank most active in attempting to actively devalue the dollar. Now, when we think about what the future holds in terms of industrial resources, well, copper is, I think it's been regarded as Dr. Copper. I think that status is probably only going to be bolstered over the coming years as demand for industrial resources to both create a new green energy infrastructure and also as a constituent in electric vehicles. It represents a secular growth trajectory in terms of demand. And commodity bull markets are predicated on supply and elasticity meets rising demand. We haven't seen a great deal of investment in new mines for almost a decade, and we are seeing significant new sources of demand for industrial resources. It's just simply different industrial resources than we saw back in the early 2000s. Lithium, in particular, hasn't looked back since breaking back above the trend mean in late 2020, and it continues to push higher. So when we look at, for example, lithium miners, they have clearly broken out and continue to extend the breakout. When we think about copper miners, Fortescue Metals, for example, was up off its lows in here today as well. That's equally true of Southern Copper, which has been more of, I think, a high beta play on copper overall. And it bounced off its lows in here as well today. As we look at some of the other renewable energy sectors, the solar ETF was close to its lows, but at least steadying here and holding the lower side of this short-term range. The outlook for the dollar is also important for emerging markets. Now, we've had a significant pullback over the last 2 days in Vietnam, and it's now rapidly unwinding its overbought condition relative to the trend mean. It's definitely encountered resistance in the region of the previous peak. Part of the reason for that is the rather celebratory mood that had been in place as the Communist Party celebrated their anniversary was marred by a number of coronavirus cases. So Vietnam is not quite out of the woods just yet, and they've had to lock down various parts of the country and engage in quarantining again. So that has sapped some enthusiasm, but it's probably a short-term factor. The reality is that vaccines are being rolled out. Of course, it's not happening fast enough for many people, but it is happening. And the speed of the rollout of vaccines will only accelerate as we move into the rest of this year. Let's not forget, we're not even through January yet, and the pace of vaccinations, well, it just takes time, and especially since there's 2 or 3 weeks between the first and second injection. one of the countries that has done best in supplying vaccines is the UK, and the FTSE 100 continues to trend higher, although it has been pulling back and consolidating over the course of the last couple of weeks. As we think about the outlook for currencies overall, well, the pound continues to push out to new recovery highs against the dollar, and it's now up to a nearly a three-year high. But the reality is that it was really oversold and undervalued, and as the UK can, and I think the UK administration can prove their ability to manage a crisis by ensuring that the UK, as a major economy with a large population, is capable of vaccinating in a timely manner, then that will, I think, begin to create some enthusiasm that they can also manage the challenges of excising the economy from the EU. As we look towards the horizon, well, there's lots of things to be enthusiastic about, but the challenge, of course, is going to be to ensure that reflation meets expectations. The reality is, though, that as long as that remains a question, we're still going to be in a liquidity-rich environment, and it is liquidity is the fuel that is required for bull markets. Central banks have killed off more bull markets than anything else, and it's only really when they start retracting that monetary assistance that bull markets generally tend to run into trouble, and we're just not at that point yet. So we have short-term overbought conditions. At some point, those are going to be unwound. Based on yesterday's downward dynamic, it looked like we're starting into that already. We might yet still be in that corrective phase. I think it's inevitable that we're going to get some form of correction over the next 6 or 7 weeks. But as long as monetary conditions remain accommodative, then pullbacks are likely to remain buying opportunities. I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.